From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Iowa has lost 99% of its native prairie and wetlands. That gives our state the unenviable distinction of having the smallest percentage of its original natural habitat remaining of all 50 states. This hour, we discuss what that transformation has meant for the state's biodiversity, and we'll hear about efforts to preserve the varied genetic material in both domesticated and wild plant and animal species. First, we'll talk with representatives of the Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, where saving seed and livestock breeds has become a booming enterprise. Then several other experts will tell us about biodiversity in the natural environment. Our discussion starts right after this news update. It's The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. For most of this hour, we want to talk about Iowa's biodiversity as planned. But before we do that, we're following the rapidly changing situation across parts of northern Iowa. Record rainfall causing flash flooding in a number of areas. According to the National Weather Service, flash flood warnings are in place for Dubuque County, and other numerous flash flood watches are in effect across the region in northern Iowa. A record amount of rainfall has fallen in Dubuque for one day. According to the Weather Service, 2.71 inches of rain already reported. The original record was 2.31, set way back in 1883, and it's still raining. As of 8 a.m. this morning, the two-day rainfall total for Dubuque, 5.55 inches. Another interesting tidbit of this news, volunteers are needed to sandbag in the Manchester area. That according to the Delaware County Emergency Management, and according to authorities, the Maquoketa River is expected to crest at 20 feet, and this is similar to the flooding they had back there in 2004. In Dyersville, flash flooding is an issue. KCRG Television reporting some home rescues are taking place. So right now we want to check in with a couple of people about this breaking news, the flash flooding in northern Iowa. First of all, we go to Tom Berger. Tom Berger, Dubuque County Emergency Management Director. Good afternoon to you, Tom.
Good afternoon.
What are you seeing in your area in Dubuque?
Well, we're just talked to the fire chief out in Dyersville, and the river has leveled off out there, so hopefully we'll start to see it fall. So that'll move on down towards Worthington and Cascade, so they're preparing for their fight down there.
Have you been out to have a look? Can you describe any of the scenes?
I have not been out of the office, no. I've been coordinating everything here with all the various communities.
In your neighboring county, in Dyersville, we were hearing reports of home rescues taking place. Anything like that happening in Dubuque County?
The Dyersville is in Dubuque County, and they did do a couple rescues to get some people out of the area. They have some vehicles staged in one certain part where they can't get in or out right now, so they're able to provide service. But everything's kind of quieting down out there now.
Mm-hmm. Road closures to report?
We still have the main one, Highway 52 north of Dubuque between Sageville and Rickardsville is still closed down. Some portions of the water has receded there, and the DOT crews are trying to clean up the mud and debris off the road and hopefully have that open when the rest of the water goes down.
I understand that a sanitary sewer backup is forcing Dubuque City officials to divert untreated wastewater.
Yeah, they have tanker trucks in now that are trying to pick up the most of that they can, but they have a handle on that, and we're hoping they're going to be able to quit that diversion shortly. I'm not sure. I haven't received word if that's been done yet or not.
Okay, and finally, Tom, looking to the forecast, what do you see for your area?
Well, we're kind of going to, the atmosphere is supposed to reload again and kind of redevelop, and we're kind of on the northern edge of that, and unfortunately, they got more rain coming our way. So,
okay, let's hope for
brace and prepare.
Let's hope for the best. Thank you, Tom Berger, Dubuque County Emergency Management Director. Let's go to Mitch Nordmeyer now, Butler County Emergency Management Director. Mitch, are you there? Good afternoon.
Yes, I am. Good afternoon.
So, tell us about the trouble spots you're focusing on in Butler County.
Well, right now we're keeping an eye on two of our communities, New Hartford and Dumont. Dumont received flooding in portion of the town about a month ago, and of course New Hartford was flooded majorly in 2008, so we're keeping a pretty close eye on both of them.
What areas of New Hartford are most susceptible to the high water?
Well, unfortunately, the way New Hartford is situated, if it does come into town, it can easily affect the entire town.
Mm. And what are the most distressing reports you're hearing? I'm sure you're getting a number of firsthand reports.
Well, right now, our rainfall totals in that area of the county are between 6 and 7 inches for the last 2 days. So, you mentioned flooding anywhere around Butler County, and everybody gets real, real nervous. So we're just trying to keep track of any road closures and keeping a real close eye on the West Fork of the Cedar River and Beaver Creek so that we can stay ahead of it and make notifications as needed.
Mm-hmm. What do you most fear over the coming couple days?
The weather report.
Doesn't look good, does it?
No, the Weather Service is calling for more rain, possibly heavy rain again tonight. So, I'm like Tom and the guys in Buchanan and Delaware County. We definitely don't need any more rain, but there's not much we can do to stop it.
Have you been in contact with other emergency management directors across northern Iowa? I'm just wondering about perhaps other trouble spots that cannot take any more water.
Well, naturally to my east, those guys are extremely busy at this point in time. And I've contacted a couple of coordinators over west who don't seem to be having any problems, and they don't need any. I mean, they had plenty of problems a month ago. So right now we're just keeping an eye and keeping close contact with the Weather Service as to what's going on and trying to make preparations.
Okay. Mitch Nordmeyer, thank you very much. Our thoughts and prayers are with you for the communities of northern Iowa affected by this flash flooding. Mitch Nordmeyer, thank you. Butler County Emergency Management Director Mitch Nordmeyer. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News, checking the breaking news we have in northern Iowa. Flash flooding occurring in that area due to the tremendous amounts of rain that has been falling. Stay tuned to Iowa Public Radio for further updates on the weather and flooding situation in the state. Now back to our regularly planned topic for today on The Exchange. Did you know that Iowa has lost 99% of its native prairie and wetlands? That gives our state the unenviable distinction of having the smallest percentage of its original natural habitat remaining of all 50 states. For the rest of the hour, we discuss what that transformation has meant for the state's biodiversity, and we'll hear about efforts to preserve the varied genetic material in both domesticated and wild plant and animal species. We'll also let you know what you can do to help preserve the state's biodiversity. First of all, joining us, Shannon Siegel and Tom Wahlberg of Seed Savers Exchange. And Seed Savers, before we talk to them, Shannon and Tom, are you on the line there?
Yes.
I'm here.
Hi, Shannon. Hi, Tom. Seed Savers Exchange is the largest non-governmental seed bank in the United States, and it's located in the 890-acre Heritage Farm near Decorah. Seed Savers Exchange permanently maintains more than 25,000 endangered vegetable varieties. Most of the varieties have been brought to North America by members' ancestors who immigrated from Europe, the Middle East, Asia, and other parts of the world. All of their programs are to preserve garden biodiversity are made possible through donations, proceeds from seed sales, and membership. And this is incredible, Shannon and Tom. Since 1975, Seed Savers Exchange members have passed on approximately 1 million samples of rare garden seeds to their other gardeners. Shannon, let's talk to you first, since you'll be talking to us, telling us more about the seed side of it. Then we'll go to the animal side of it with Tom in a moment. Tell us about Seed Savers and how biodiversity fits into your mission.
Well, the varieties that we're preserving, as you mentioned, they've come from people's ancestors. They've come from all different parts of the world. And so a lot of them are varieties that, if you think back historically to gardens or when we had more agricultural communities, farmers were saving their best seed year after year, and what it was occurring in the process was basically selection. So varieties were being adapted to the regional, environmental conditions. Mm-hmm. And so if you think about that in terms of biodiversity, what you have are these varieties that wound up with all different combinations of genes and traits, essentially, suited to different regions and different areas. And so what we now have is a big collection of varieties that, you know, span quite a big variation as far as what their benefits are, what their traits are, and where they would perform well, what they would do.
Tell us more specifically, Shannon, how you go about that mission.
Well, from my role here as collection curator, we maintain a gene bank on site here, which has developed, you know, sort of organically over time. Initially, Seed Savers started just as a member exchange, with different members exchanging seeds amongst themselves. And over time, we started serving as a backup. We would maintain the seeds here as a backup to our members. And that just sort of grew in time, and now we function essentially as a gene bank. And that is, as far as what we do here, we have ideal storage conditions. We're preserving these varieties. We have to regenerate them on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And the idea is just to keep them preserved as long as we can.
So remind us, why is biodiversity important in fruits and vegetables?
Well, I guess important in all species. If you think about natural selection, there are always pressures occurring in the environment that, depending on what genes are present, different varieties will be able to adapt. If you narrow that gene pool, essentially, if you lose those genes, the material there's less response that can happen by mm-hmm. any given variety or species. So mm-hmm. if something happens quite different in the environment, there's less of a reserve of a material for species to be able to respond to.
Mm-hmm. So if you were thinking about this as if you were a cook or something, and you want as many spices in the spice rack as you can get, right, and not eliminate them, you might need them in the future.
Right.
If we can think about it that way. That's interesting. Now, we want to take a short break in just a minute, but Tom Wahlberg, very quickly, you deal with animals, cattle specifically. How does a seed-saving organization get into the cattle business?
And I did a little research on that lately because I pretty much take care of the records for the cattle. But, it goes back to the late 80s where Kent Whaley, co-founder, had been visited by an English livestock breeder and, you know, researching some of the livestock here. And there was a herd of ancient white park cattle in Iowa at that time.
Tom, I'm going to cut you off. We'll continue the story about the white park cattle, this ancient cattle breed that was recently moved from the critical to the threatened list on the American Livestock Breeds Conservation Priority List. We'll hear the whole story of this, why it's important to preserve the biodiversity that we have. If you have questions about maintaining a diverse stock of genetic material in both plants and animals, join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. The exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. We'll be back in 1 minute. It's The Exchange, and this hour and the rest of this hour, we're talking about the importance of biodiversity, both in plants and animals in Iowa, what we have lost since the pioneers first came to this land, what can be preserved, how and why genetic diversity in both plants and animals is important. Joining us in the next few minutes, Shannon Siegel, collection curator, and also Tom Wahlberg, seed house manager, both at Seed Savers Exchange. And Tom, when we went into that break, you were going to tell us a little bit about this story, the ancient white park cattle, a breed that has been recently moved from a critical to a threatened list. That means we have more of them. Continue your story, Tom.
Okay. I think I'm going to back up way further to actually the herd has documented back to pre-Christian times. So the Druids, if anybody wants to know a little bit more about the ancient white park cattle, there's depictions of Druids with using the ancient white park cattle in their ceremonies. And so the breed goes back that far, and as recently as the 1990s, there were fewer than 60 in the United States and fewer than 300 in the world. And Sea Savers was part of that.
Mm-hmm. And how many, now most of these cattle are found in your area there, the Decorah area?
Well, we've got a herd here in Decorah. There's another herd in Montana. There are three other herds in the country.
How many do we have now?
How many cattle do we have?
Yeah, how much has it grown?
We've got 105 cattle at Seed Savers, and the herd, the getting off of the endangered list, we estimate 600 calves for this year.
So tell us about this cattle and what genetic traits are believed to be important within this ancient White Park cattle breed.
It's a little bit different than your domesticated cattle. It's I think you'd call it more aggressive. It's more of a wild breed. The cows are very protective of their young. It's a larger frame than your beef cattle. Some people confuse the ancient White Park with, say, British White, which is more common, or any of the polled white breeds, much more along the lines of our current beef breeds with the rounded, rounded backs. And these are much more angular, larger, more true to what they would have been back a couple thousand years ago.
Interesting. Very interesting. Tom Wahlberg with us, Shannon Siegel of the Seed Savers Exchange. Let's go to our first caller. If you have a question or want to share something you're doing to maintain Iowa's biodiversity, I know there are a lot of seed savers out there. 1-866-780-9100, the exchange at iowapublicradio.org, our email. Jerry with us from Des Moines. Good afternoon, Jerry.
Hey, how are you today?
Doing great. What's your question or comment?
I noticed they were talking about the vegetable plants that Seed Savers has. As home growers, can you grow those plants and then retrieve your seeds from those plants and just replant them year after year?
Shannon, tell us about that. Would seem to work, wouldn't it?
For everything that we distribute, be it through our catalog or to our members through our yearbook, those are all what you would consider an open pollinated variety. So if you save seed from them, they will come true to type in following years, provided that you give them the isolation they need. If you were to grow two varieties of the same species, if it were an outcrossing species, in the same garden in the same year, those varieties will cross with each other. But unlike hybrids, they have the ability to come true to type if you give them the right conditions.
Tell us, Shannon, more generally, what are some things that home gardeners can do to help preserve the biodiversity we have?
Oh, I think, you know, as gardeners, I mean, what we're looking at with domesticated crops. Obviously, they've come a long way from your wild relatives.
Right.
But I think just an interest in these different varieties, you know, preserving some of the older varieties, looking back to what the beneficial traits were, why people used to grow them. I think really just trying to, you know, the number of varieties that have been offered through catalogs has just gone down over the years as the whole agriculture industry becomes more consolidated.
Mm-hmm.
And so gardeners can, you know, keep trying to keep these old varieties in existence and keep them growing.
For anything we talk about in this segment, I know there's lots of information to be found in much more depth at seedsavers.org, the Seed Savers Exchange website, seedsavers.org. Tell us quickly, Shannon, how a seed is saved, because you have to do it in a certain way or it doesn't survive, does it?
It varies quite a bit depending on the species or on the crop that you're doing. Essentially, you can break plants down into dry-fruited or fleshy-fruited. Dry-fruited would be things that you would actually see your seed in a dry, for instance, a bean, where you would have a pod that would visibly dry on the plant. A fleshy fruit would be something like a tomato or a melon. And mainly you have to just know when the crops are mature. Seed maturity can often come past market maturity, so some crops you'd have to leave in the field past when you would normally eat them. Some, like tomato, that's a great example of one where you can eat your fruit and save your seed all at the same time. And it depends on the different crops. Sometimes you have to take additional steps, such as fermenting, extracting. You'll want to clean out the chaff, the pod, the debris from your seeds. But other than that, the main thing is to dry your seeds as thoroughly as you can and as quickly as you can and try to store them cool and dry, mm-hmm. and you should have seeds for some years to come.
Jerry in Des Moines, does that give you some ideas? Jerry has left us. I hope it did give Jerry some ideas. Once again, seedsavers.org to find out more information about the Seed Savers Exchange. Tom Wahlberg, tell us about any future plans for Seed Savers to be involved with preserving other livestock breeds past this ancient White Park cattle breed.
Well, last year we started displaying poultry down at our visitor center. And those birds, we are not maintaining them as breeding stock. They are given to us by Glenn Drowns, who would be the person to contact. But we're raising awareness of those heritage poultry breeds, which are on an endangered varieties.
Mm-hmm. How many breeds of poultry are there? I read somewhere once, and it was astounding. Do you happen to know?
No, I do not.
Okay, very good. What are the biggest challenges you faced with this breed, this ancient White Park cattle breed that goes back to prehistoric times almost?
What are the challenges?
What were the biggest challenges that were faced in getting this herd up to a size where it can move from the critical to the threatened list?
Yeah, well, I think the Wes Henthorne out at the Bee Bar Ranch in Montana and Kent Whaley and some other very key people establishing the Ancient White Park Cattle Association means of registering those and having very clear direction of where they want to go. I mean, when the breed itself, when there were so few as 60 animals left, each calf becomes pretty dear. What are the guidelines and which ones do you decide to keep genetically? Did you keep them all for breeding?
Mm-hmm.
And now we're able to be much more selective and true to type. There is a recessive black gene, for example. Every once in a while, a cow will throw a black calf. In the very early stages, we would register those black calves just because otherwise the breed may not survive. Mm-hmm. At this point, it's grown to where we're not at that point where we would need to keep the black calves to perpetuate that or to try to encourage that black recessed gene. At this point, we're registering only white and typical calves.
Okay, can anyone see these ancient White Park cattle at the Heritage Farm near Ecora?
Yes, we maintain two separate herds, about 40 animals each. And for display purposes, we keep a couple of cows and their calves and a couple bulls up by the visitor center. So those can be seen at any time. And if anyone were to call for an appointment and wanted to see the rest of the herd, we could arrange that. And we're also, the breed has grown to the point where we're able to offer up some of the stock for sale. For example, at the end of the year here, we would give preference to someone who was looking to start a herd of their own for maintaining the breed purposes. So that would be something they could contact us for.
It is a magnificent-looking animal, the ancient White Park cattle breed. Thank you very much. Tom Wahlberg, Seed House Manager, and Shannon Siegel, Collection Curator at Seed Savers Exchange. Once again, to find out more about their work with plants and animals, seedsavers.org. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we continue to talk about biodiversity in Iowa, what we have lost since the pioneers first came to this land, what can be preserved, how you can help preserve genetic diversity. Also, when we come back, we'll have a number of experts with us from the DNR, Iowa DNR, also Professor of Biology Tom Rosberg of Drake University. When we return, call with your questions and comments, 1-866-780-9100. We'll be back in just a few minutes. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thank you for joining us over the noon hour. And for most of this hour, we've been talking about Iowa's biodiversity. Iowa has lost an incredible 99% of its native prairie and wetlands. That gives our state the distinction of having the smallest percentage of its original natural habitat remaining in all 50 states, the most altered landscape in the Union. So we're talking about that transformation, what it's meant for the state's biodiversity, both in terms of plants and animals, and about efforts to preserve the varied genetic material. Perhaps you'd like to share with us a story of what you're doing to preserve biodiversity. We know there's seed savers out there, all kinds of things happening. Tell us about it. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100 or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. And we want to have our conversation. Joining our conversation now, Bruce Ayersman, Wildlife Diversity Coordinator for the Iowa DNR, the Department of Natural Resources. Bruce, good afternoon to you. Bruce, are you there? Bruce is not there. We'll hope to hook up with him in just a few minutes. Let's go to Kelly Poole. Kelly is also with the DNR. She's an ecologist with the Iowa DNR. Kelly, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great to have you with us this afternoon.
Tell
us, so we're looking at, with you, focusing in on the aquatic systems in Iowa. How would you describe the biodiversity in Iowa's aquatic systems?
Well, you know, we've seen considerable downward trend in the status of a lot of aquatic species and communities in the state. Historically, you know, Iowa's water systems have been really rich in biodiversity. Most of the state is within the Mississippi River Basin, which is one of the world's largest river systems, and it's well known for having pretty high aquatic biodiversity, at least historically.
So give me sort of the length and breadth of that biodiversity. What types of animals? Are we talking animals, plants, or what are we talking about when we're talking about an aquatic system?
Well, you know, I'm talking mostly about wildlife. So fish, mussels, dragonflies, damselflies, crayfish, those animals that are linked.
We seem to have lost Kelly there. Well, if you'd like to call in and talk about some of the restoration or some of the efforts that you're making, let's see if we can get Kelly back here. Not able to get Kelly. Danielle is joining us. Nope, our phones seem to have really wiped out on my screen as far as that's concerned. Talking about biodiversity, and we're trying to connect with a number of our guests. Let's see, is Bruce there?
Yes, I am, Ben.
Bruce, thank you for joining us.
Yes. Having a few technical getting through.
We're having a few technical problems this afternoon, but I'm glad you could join us. Bruce Ayersman, Wildlife Diversity Coordinator of the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. So let's talk specifically wildlife. Hopefully Kelly can join us again and finish up talking about the aquatic life in Iowa and how that diversity, biodiversity, has been affected. Talk about the wildlife on the land, Bruce. How would you rate Iowa's biodiversity on a scale of up to 10, for instance?
Well, actually, we have most of our original biodiversity. The main problem I see is that we have extremely reduced numbers for the very reason that you mentioned. Our habitat has been extremely altered. We have a fraction of the habitat that existed here before European settlement. And so, for instance, I can tell you that we've only lost about 28 species of birds, mammals, fish and amphibians and reptiles from our historical records. That's how many that have disappeared from the state.
Can you list a few of those that we have lost? Would we recognize their
names? Well, yeah, I'm sure most people will recognize that the passenger pigeon and the Carolina parakeet, of course, are extinct species. And at one time, just a kind of a side note, the passenger pigeon actually numbered in the millions in Iowa, and it was probably the most significantly or largest number land bird, you know, ever.
What wiped them out?
Primarily hunting. Hunting. Well, you know, people were harvesting them for food, and were very good at it. And there was no protection for that species. And by the time people realized it was diminishing, it was too late.
And the type of parakeet you mentioned?
Yeah, the Carolina parakeet. I guess I don't know a lot about it, but it disappeared at the same time as the passenger pigeon in the early 1900s. But it also was considered, it was considered an agricultural pest. And what little I've read about it was that it would descend in large flocks on crops and then people would shoot them. So I'm not sure they were eating that one as much as they considered it a pest for their you know, crops they needed for survival.
So the passenger pigeon, the Carolina parakeet, extinct, so it would be pretty hard to get those back unless we make some great technological advances. But what about the others? Can we import some of the ones we've lost in our state?
We actually have. Let me if you don't mind, I'll mention a few species that we've lost that we may not get back, things like the bison and elk and timber wolves. Actually, there are two subspecies of wolves that Iowa had historically, a black bear, although we do occasionally have a black bear come into Iowa. Those are species that we probably won't be able to support again in the future. But as far as species that we have brought back, you know, things like the peregrine falcon, that was gone in the mid-60s because of DDT and other problems. Bald eagle was gone as a nesting species for over 70 years, mostly from habitat destruction.
Right.
Trumpeter swan was harvested primarily for its feathers and as a food item back in the 1800s. Right. It was pretty much gone by then.
I saw several bald eagles just yesterday, and that's an amazing story. Yeah. Weren't we in the 70s, weren't we down to just a few nesting couples?
Well, actually, we had no nesting of bald eagles in Iowa. Our last nesting record previous to 1977 was 1905. And then we only had, I think, 13 nesting pairs of bald eagles in 1993. And then we jumped all the way to about and our recovery goal, we were just hoping to get them back. And our recovery goal was to have 10 nesting species by the year 2000. By the year 2000, we had about 100 nesting pairs, and now we think we're approaching perhaps 300 nesting pairs.
300 nesting pairs, so
it's extraordinary.
Fortunately, we can enjoy them and the diversity that they bring to our skies, and also they balance out our ecosystem. Predators are important.
Yes, and that's a good story. It's nice to to have some success stories to go along with things that aren't going so well.
So what is the greatest threat that you would point to in Iowa's wildlife population currently? We haven't changed the landscape on the order that the settlers have, or have we? Is that continuing, or are we?
Yeah, most of the largest change that occurred by 1900, we had, when Iowa became a state in 1846, we had 96,000 people. By 1870, we had 1 million. By 1900, we had 2.2 million people spread out on about 200,000 farmsteads on the landscape. So at that point, we'd already pretty much altered the landscape to the point where a large number of those species that I mentioned, you know, the 30 or so species that disappeared, most of those had already were gone from the landscape by the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
But we have continued to, you know, chip away, and habitat loss is certainly our number one problem, and then the loss of connectivity between habitats, that's crucial. I don't think most people...
What do you mean by that, connectivity?
Well, things like, let's go to the creepy crawly things, like insects, even more so, frogs, toads, salamanders, lizards, turtles, those animals can't get around as fast as birds can, or can't cover large distances like birds. So you need the kind of habitat that they need to survive. It needs to have some connectivity. And our riparian areas are really some of the most crucial habitat we have left as far as the connecting corridors. And then there's a space thing. A lot of species require large amount of habitat to survive. For instance, a cerulean warbler may need 500 acres to 1,000 acres of older growth forest, or at least a large proportion of that is older growth forest. So a lot of different species have very specific needs that they aren't going to survive if they don't have that.
You know, Bruce, you've solved a puzzle that I've had for a long time. I remember as a boy growing up in Cedar Falls, I remember it was not uncommon to find salamanders in the yard, and I don't know the last time I've seen a salamander in Iowa.
Yeah, you're very, very right. When I grew up, tiger salamanders were common at the schoolyard. We'd always see them, you know, around the school building and so forth, and actually that particular species, which we still I think assume is common, is not nearly as common as it was historically, and I think that's the point I want to make is, even though we have a lot of these species, it's really a matter of scale. If you think about 28 million acres of prairie being reduced to 30,000 acres of prairie, and there is actually, you know, several million acres of additional grassland, but it's not the same as the original, and you know, the number of animals on the landscape when the settlers came through here in the 1800s was phenomenal. When Marquette and Joliet came up to Mississippi in the 1600s, they recorded a herd of bison. They could see a herd of 400 bison on the shore of the Mississippi. You know, just things like that are very hard to imagine at this point. But as we reduce that amount of space for animals, that really limits the number. And as the numbers get down, you know, there's a critical number where they don't recover. And that's exactly what happened to the passenger pigeon. We didn't understand that till almost 100 years later, that it was a kind of a critical mass thing.
And once you drop below it, it's doomed.
Yes, yes, for their type of existence, the social paradigm they had, they needed large numbers to be able to survive.
Bruce Ayersman, Wildlife Diversity Coordinator with the DNR, please stay with us. Tom Rosberg is joining us. He's a professor of biology at Drake University. Tom, good afternoon. Welcome to our program.
Hello.
Hi. Now, Bruce just talked about the wildlife species. Let's talk with you a little bit about the plant species, native plant species. Bruce was not saying that we haven't lost that many species in terms of the wildlife. We have them, but in far fewer numbers. What about the how would you rate the biodiversity of Iowa's native plant species?
Well, I would say that in a similar way, we probably haven't lost very many species. It's kind of hard to know for sure. We have roughly maybe 2,100 plant species, vascular plant species in the state, but a good number of those, probably 300, maybe 400, are not native species. So somewhere around maybe 1,800 native species, I suppose. But, of course, we don't know what that number was in 1846, the number of native plant species. But we could have lost some. Again, we don't know for sure, but I don't think it's very many. So, likewise, it's not necessarily that we've lost species. When we talk about biodiversity occurs at three different scales. And although the numbers of species is probably the most common way to think about it, another important scale is the genetic diversity that's present. And that requires large numbers of diverse individuals. And again, similar to what Bruce was saying, that's certainly one of the problems with plants as well, is that the populations of native plants that we have left are so small and so fragmented that the genetic diversity is not very high at all.
Mm-hmm. So wouldn't a solution be, because plants are portable, we lose a plant species in Iowa, can't we just go somewhere else to get the same plant species, bring it here?
In some cases, we could probably do that. Certainly there are... some of these plant species are probably doing well in other parts of the country, the Midwest, I suppose. But, you know, that's really not solving the problem. I mean, if we lose a plant species, there's some fundamental reason why we've lost it, why that population has disappeared. And, you know, you could keep bringing, I suppose, individuals of plants in, but that's not really solving the problem, getting to the crux of the problem. You know, why did that plant population go extinct in the first place?
Right. So what do you consider to be the biggest threat to Iowa's native plants?
Well, I think it's probably invasive exotic species. Like Bruce was saying, I think habitat loss is certainly one of the key things that has contributed to loss of biodiversity. In fact, there's an acronym that I like to use, HIPPO. HIPPO is an acronym that stands for the five things that contribute most to the loss of biodiversity, and the H stands for habitat loss, the I stands for invasive species, the two P's stand for pollution and population growth. That's human population growth, and the O stands for overconsumption. And I think the first three are certainly the most important ones for what's happening here in Iowa. And again, most of the habitat loss has probably occurred, a huge amount of it occurred, like Bruce was saying, by 1900. We still are seeing some of that, but now I think for plants, what I'm seeing as I do my field work is just a very large threat by invasive species, plant species, that is, that are introduced, have been introduced in various ways to the Iowa landscape and don't have any real control. They weren't a part of the ecosystem that evolved here, and so they're sort of without their natural biological control. And in for some species, this just allows them to be very competitive and over-aggressive and establish very dense stands, which completely outcompetes native species.
As a matter of fact, Dean Borg of Iowa Public Radio shared a story with me before the show that he and his wife decided to turn some of their property over to return it to wetlands, try to return it to wetlands, and they've just been given notice that they have until a certain date to get rid of the weed problem. It's been taken over by Canadian thistle, an invasive species. So there,
right.
It didn't really work.
Right. Canada thistle is a very, very tough one to get rid of. It's very common in damp areas. Reed canary grass would be another one that would fit that description. Buckthorn and honeysuckle in forested areas. Wild carrot. You can see wild carrot blooming across the landscape right now. It's just all over the place. Wild parsnip. And another species that's kind of making a strong, surge into the state, it seems like, over the last 10 years is poison hemlock. Seeing a lot more of that than we did just 5 years ago.
Let's go to George. George calling from Sheridan. George, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, I'm a corn and soybean farmer, and I've restored a little wetland with some prairie species, you know, and it's very interesting to see the new biodiversity there. But I've also chosen not to raise genetically modified crops. And I think that the biggest threat to biodiversity around the world and basically the threat to create a lot of Iowas all over Brazil and Africa and et cetera is Roundup Ready crops and BT crops. So that Monsanto and DuPont will be spreading corn and soybean production all over the world.
Okay, let's get a reaction to that. Our hour is getting away from us, George. Good point. Let's talk about the GMOs that we've have mapping so many genomes and have all this these tools to work with genetic material from plants and animals. How does that come into play when we're preserving genetic diversity? Tom Rosberg.
Well, that's a little bit out of my area. I'm not a genetic scientist, but I share some of the concerns that the listener expressed. I know that there's some good evidence now that plants are becoming, some of the weedy species are becoming even more resistant to the Roundup, and so in a sense what we're doing is producing super aggressive weeds. And the only way to get around that, of course, is for the chemical companies to manufacture different chemicals that attack the plant some different way. And, of course, that's, then another round of herbicides that farmers have to buy. And so I think that there is certainly some concern there.
Okay. Well, Tom, we have just a few minutes left of our hour. I want to ask your opinion. Ask our three guests now. Bruce Ayersman still with us. Also, we've reestablished contact with Kelly Poole of the DNR. Hi, Kelly. Kelly, are you? You are there. I've got to make this little click, and then Kelly's there. Hi, Kelly.
Hi.
Hi. I want to finish up the hour by going around to the three of you, Kelly, Tom, and Bruce, and just talk about what Iowans can do, what we can do to increase diversity in the plant and animal species. Kelly, why don't you start us off with the aquatic systems of Iowa. What do you see when you look forward, and what could Iowans do?
Well, you know, I think any decisions that are made about land use, is really where we have the greatest opportunities for protecting or at least sort of holding on to our aquatic biodiversity as it is. Land use decisions that protect our water resources at local levels have tremendous implications downstream for improving water quality. There's a lot of interest in local, state, federal interest right now in working at watershed levels to improve water quality, and you just can't really underestimate the impact or the implications downstream of working sort of locally to make changes where you are downstream.
Okay, thank you, Kelly Poole with the Iowa DNR. Let me turn to you, Bruce Ayersman, Wildlife Diversity Coordinator for the DNR. When you look forward, what can be done? How can we reclaim or hold on to this diversity in wildlife?
Well, actually, Kelly, that's on a very important point. Recently, the state created a wildlife action plan, and within that plan, we determined, first of all, we did an assessment of all the species of Iowa and looked at which groups were the most threatened. And, of course, mussels, which Kelly is an expert of mussels, is the most threatened or endangered group in the state, which, again, is an indicator of water quality, but also amphibians and reptiles and fish. All three of those groups, almost 50% of those species we have as greatest conservation need species. That's what we have them listed in our plan. And to be able to deal or help those species, we absolutely have to do better with our water quality issues, and then just the amount of habitat we need more. I think we need more buffers on our rivers and streams. I mentioned the corridor effect. I really think that if we can put the proper habitats back along our rivers and streams, that's going to go a good distance toward dealing with the problems with the pollution of the rivers, but it also will provide the necessary habitat for a lot of these species that are declining.
Okay, let's go to Tom Rosberg. We have just a minute or so left. Tom, closing words as you look forward. What gives you hope? Where should we be? What should we be doing?
Well, I've got maybe like four or five things that I can just touch on real briefly in terms of what the everyday person can do to help with this. I think, first of all, support the Iowa Water and Land Legacy Initiative, which is coming to vote on November 2nd. That will, if that passes, that will establish a Natural Resource and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund, which will provide a huge change in terms of the amount of funding that the state has to solve these problems.
And that will be on the ballot for November voters, won't it?
Correct.
Okay,
right.
And it goes by the acronym IWIL, Iowa's Water and Land Legacy. Quickly, the other points
correct.
To make.
Support the Nature Conservancy, Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation. These are groups that are working very hard to preserve biodiversity and in terms of at the landscape scale, which is what we need to focus on. Also, there's lots of friends groups out there that you can join. People can join and help do invasive species control. For example, Polk County Conservation Board has a friends group that helps to control non-native species of Brown's Woods. And lastly, just learn about your landscape and the environment that you live in and take more concern for it. That's where it has to start.
Okay, we'll leave it there and hope that the salamanders and all the other diversity that we used to have will return to our landscapes. Tom Rosberg of Drake University, Bruce Ayersman, and Kelly Poole of the DNR, thank you all for joining us in this half hour.
You're welcome.
The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Podcasting and on-demand audio available. All you have to do is go to iowapublicradio.org. We'd love to have your comments and questions. Perhaps you want to suggest a program for a future date. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.